With me now in the studio is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, who is fresh back from those Iowa caucuses. Anthony, welcome back to Boston.
Hey, Callum. Nice to be back.
Also with us from Concord, New Hampshire, is Radio Boston's Chris Siderick. Hey there, Chris.
Hey, Callum.
We've got some nice music in the background behind you, Chris. Where exactly on the trail are we catching you?
So I am set up here at the Youth Climate and Clean Energy Town Hall. It's at the Bank of New Hampshire stage in downtown Concord. You mentioned you can hear some filler music behind me. It's been buzzing here all day. We've heard from five candidates and a surrogate so far. There's a couple more to come. We're in a little bit of a lull right now, but folks are pretty engaged in it here.
What's the mood? I mean, this started pretty early in the morning. Were folks jazzed to get to this thing?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I got here about 7:30, and the sidewalks were already packed with people who were standing out there with signs, campaigning for their candidate. There's even a pro-Trump campaign set up down there with a video display. The energy that was here at 7:30 in the morning was shocking to me, especially when you're talking about an all-day town hall event. We had talked earlier in the summer about whether or not New Hampshire still has that special magic, that first-in-the-nation primary feel to it. Folks here are clearly engaged and excited for this election.
Well, Anthony Brooks, jump in here on that, because we were just talking with Lori Trahan about whether Iowa and New Hampshire should still be first in the nation, and this sort of engagement that Chris is describing in the Granite State is one of the justifications that New Hampshire residents list as a reason they should keep their status. They say they've built this culture over decades of being really hyper-engaged, and here they are turning out at 7:30 on a Wednesday morning.
Absolutely. I mean, look, there are two ways to look at this, and clearly that argument is a valid argument. Of course, the people in New Hampshire and of Iowa are sincere about the way that they engage in these campaigns. But I think the lesson from Iowa, I think I agree with Lori Trahan, is there have been these discussions for a long, long time about whether these two states represent the diversity of the U.S., and clearly they don't. And I think what we saw in Iowa, this meltdown of the caucus process because of this new app, was just a reminder of that, and I think it's going to bring to the surface, again, to the forefront, this criticism of starting this process with these two states. And, Callum, I would just say this, you know, I'm struck by I watched a caucus on caucus night in Des Moines, and it was a precinct in downtown Des Moines, about 900 people. And you really have to be in the room to watch this. And on the one hand, you can be impressed with a level of civic engagement that exists and neighbors coming together.
Sure.
But on the other hand, it's the most bizarre way to run an election. It really is bizarre.
I like the time-lapse videos on Twitter that really illustrate
yeah,
how
I mean,
chaotic
it's like
it can
herding
be.
Cats. It's chaotic. There were new rules. There were new procedures. And then there was all this concern, of course, about the new app. But I don't even think the new app is the problem here, because to me, the sort of metaphor is it's like hooking an app up to a feed bag on a horse and buggy. You know, the horse and buggy is the problem here. This is not an efficient or particularly democratic way. In fact, I'd go this far. I would say if you wanted to design a system to exclude as many people as possible from voting, organize a Iowa-style caucus. I mean, very few people can get to these caucuses. They exclude working people, overnight janitors, cab drivers, people who can't afford childcare. It's the most bizarre way to initiate what is, you know, the beginning of a really consequential set of decisions in the election season.
So we're talking politics with WBUR's Anthony Brooks here in the studio and Chris Siderick up in New Hampshire. And you can give us a ring at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. John is in Burlington, Mass. John, what's on your mind? Go ahead, John.
Yes, how you doing? My name is John. I'm work at MIT at Cambridge, and I feel as though I don't have a candidate to vote for. I hate Trump ethically and morally all around, but I don't feel as though fiscally I can vote for a Democrat because, you know, you can't take care of the whole world. You need border control, and you need to control spending, and I don't feel as though they like giving it away. And I work hard for mine. I pay for my three kids to go to college. I'm in debt up to my yin-yang.
Yeah, I bet.
And I just feel as though the Democrats are, you know, I know they say a lot, but financially I'm going to pay for everybody's education. That's what they want.
All right, John, thank you for the ring. Chris Sidera, can I go back to you? Because John says he's still trying to make up his mind. He doesn't like the idea of voting for the president's reelection, but he's having a hard time choosing a Democrat. So help him out. You were with a lot of the Democratic candidates today. What did they have to say that might help John make up his mind?
Well, first of all, we also heard from another Republican candidate, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, who was here and really kind of preaching this idea of going beyond the party system and trying to find a common set of values. So that's one option for you, John. I also heard from Senator Amy Klobuchar, who talked a lot about kind of the missed opportunities with climate change, but more also about the framing in terms of how we present this issue to the American public. She talked about working on the state level on climate legislation and said that some of their best allies were people who were enthusiastic hunters or who loved fishing or snowmobiling, folks that wouldn't necessarily politically align with Democrats, but by the framing of the issue, it really kind of helped them connect to what was at stake.
This terrorism came from countries that we don't want to be dependent on for their foreign oil. So why don't we do akin to a carbon tax, put that money into developing our own renewable energy? I swear to God, 80% of the country at that moment would have said yes. It would have seen as patriotism. But instead, at that moment, he asked people to go shopping.
I think she's talking to George, George W. Bush, right?
So yes.
Anthony Brooks, how about that argument then? I mean, you got Amy Klobuchar saying, you know, this climate issue is something that people across the aisle can maybe agree on, but we got to frame it the right way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, but I was struck by John's phone call and you know, struggling for a candidate to look for. And I have to say, one of the sort of overriding impressions that I had when I was out in Iowa, it wasn't so much that everyone reflected exactly what John was saying, but this struggle that people are engaged with, looking for the right candidate. And the sort of the tension that I was struck by out there was this tension between people wanting to vote their heart or else wanting to sort of look for that candidate who they thought other people would find more electable. And it was sort of tying them in knots. And so as a result, a lot of people were leaving their decision right up to the last minute. And I think the same tension is on the ground among Democrats in New Hampshire. There are, you know, there is this tension between who is the most electable person and who do people really want to vote for. I think in part that explains why Elizabeth Warren, for example, has lost some support. I think there are a lot of questions about, you know, I'm ready to vote for a woman, but is the rest of the country ready to vote for a woman? She's certainly facing those kinds of questions and has begun to address them directly in her campaign speeches. So, yeah, interesting time for Democratic voters.
So what are you hearing then from voters, Chris? You're on the ground in Concord right now. What are they telling you today?
Well, there's one thing that I've heard from a couple of folks that I thought was really interesting. I spoke to one of the students who asked a question of Pete Buttigieg, Jedediah Crook, and I asked him if he thought that climate change was an important issue to the voters of New Hampshire. Obviously, today's event is completely dedicated to climate change. But if you look at the surrounding states of the Northeast, New Hampshire hasn't always kept pace with climate legislation. Here's what he had to say about what voters are thinking about climate change here in the Granite State.
I think it's an important issue to voters in the state, but only in direct ways in which it either benefits or hurts them, as I'm sure it is to like most people across the country. But from what I've seen, it, at least in terms of who we have voted for locally, it doesn't seem to be a major issue for a lot of the folks living in the state.
So folks who are here today, obviously very concerned about this issue. We'll see if that is reflected at the polls next Tuesday.
Yeah, let's hear from a few more, too. On the line with us is Karen in Lawrence. Karen, what are you thinking about?
Well, as we're talking about the various ways in which our democracy is broken, starting with how the caucuses were, like, so weird, and I really liked the idea that it was like herding cats. But the real big elephant in the room, so to speak, is, to me, is the Electoral College. And until we fix that, I don't think we're going to have fair elections because, you know, in the last election, the Electoral College gave Donald Trump the presidency when Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. And it's set up in such a way that it really favors the Republicans. And so until we do something about the Electoral College, I don't think we're going to have fair elections again. for a long time.
Karen, thanks for the ring. Let's try to get one more. Bob is in Providence. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, Anthony was pointing out the shortcomings of the caucus system. I'd like to mention that the primary system is equally problematical. Most folks don't vote in either party, and instead the party primaries are vulnerable to a relatively small, activist, unrepresentative elite. On the Democratic side, it's the left and socialists. On the right-hand side, it's the hard right. On the Republican side, it's the hard right. In neither case do these folks represent the broad base of the party. And so, like the Democrats right now, we may be in a situation where they nominate an unelectable person who is a socialist. America is not a socialist country. It is a center-right country. And while, you know, I can vote for Bernie, I don't think the public will.
All right, Bob, thank you. Thanks for the ring, Bob. We got it. Anthony, so he was sort of responding to what you said, but I'm hearing a lot of process critiques here. You say the caucus is kind of a mess. Bob says primaries aren't much better.
No, I completely...
Karen says the Electoral College is messed up. We got a lot of complaints about the process.
No, there are a lot of complaints, and I think there's validity to all these complaints. I completely agree with Bob, by the way, and I didn't mean to pick exclusively on the caucus process. There's no question that the primary process rewards involvement of the extremes of the two parties. Absolutely. No problem. And I'm not sure what the solution is to that. I'm really not. I mean, I think one of the solutions to the New Hampshire, Iowa stranglehold is to think about, I don't know, a rotation of states every election cycle, or maybe a rotation of groupings of states that would go first. That might be a little more democratic.
You know, Chris, as we
talk about...
I'd love
to ask you, Anthony, if I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to that point, I think one of the things that's jumped out from today's event is, even though this is a 300-seat theater, the vibe that the candidates are giving off is a very informal one. It's almost as if everyone's sitting around the table kind of having a conversation naturally. And I'm wondering, Anthony, do you think that's reflective of campaign style in New Hampshire specifically? And would you potentially be losing that if it moved to a bigger state?
I think you would obviously lose the sort of intimate contact if you move to a grouping of... I mean, look, that's one of the arguments in favor of Iowa and New Hampshire. Is these are two states that are very good at sort of doing this and expecting this, and candidates have to kind of adapt their styles to it, and you do have that sort of intimate contact. That's a positive thing about the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary, but I don't think it has to be exclusive to those two states. I mean, I'm sure if you had a caucus system or a primary system that began in, I don't know, Arkansas, that folks down there would respond very well as well. But yeah, I think that would be the danger. You would lose that kind of intimate contact, but you have to ask what kind of price we're paying now for this system.
All right, let's squeeze in one more call. Jeannie is in Wareham. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi, I just think it's really important for everybody to come together over the fact that what's the real issue that people care about is defeating Trump. Everybody's talk about kitchen table issues and things like that, and the Democratic Party needs to unite. And I really believe that if Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren were to share the ticket, then you'd probably get both sides of the coin. You'd get someone who's liberal, and you'd get someone who really knows the inside out of our government and who's been doing it for years. I think it's so important to really recognize that what the Democratic Party needs to do right now is to defeat Trump.
All right, Jeannie, thanks for the ring. Last word to you, Anthony Brooks. So Jeannie says the important thing is to defeat President Trump, but I'm hoping you can just kind of pull the lens back on the last week or so and the little bit of week to come, because I think you'd have to say politically the president's had a very good stretch. I mean, he had this mess in Iowa that he could laugh about on Monday. He had a State of the Union last night that was very theatrical. He's about to get acquitted probably later today. Jeannie wants to knock him out of office, but he might be in good shape.
Well, he certainly is having a good week. There's no question about that. And he's going to be hard to beat in November with an economy going that strong and a very fervently committed base. But I understand where Jeannie's coming from. And this is certainly what you hear from Democratic voters across Iowa and New Hampshire, that no matter what, they're committed to defeating Trump. And I think that's sort of the challenge, the kind of existential challenge that they're facing, is trying to figure out which candidate is best suited to defeat Trump. And there isn't really a clear answer to that. And that's why we have primaries.
Any clarity forming where you are, Chris, as the Democratic voters try to get behind somebody who's going to beat President Trump?
you know, the overriding theme of folks I've talked to today is just they're kind of frustrated with the bickering of our current political environment, and they really want to see folks coming together and trying to craft real-world solutions. That's been kind of the bottom line.
All right. That is Radio Boston's Chris Siderick in Concord, New Hampshire for us. Chris, thanks.
Thanks for having me, Cal.
Also with us in studio was WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Thanks, Anthony.
Hey, my pleasure.